Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a double episode-ish of Sour Graps. I am your host, Alex Pilewski, and everything sucks. Probably nothing more than a billion-dollar company forcing their independent contractors, not employees, to show up to work and during a fucking plague and then not testing them as to whether or not they have said plague. And, you know, this is not like, you know, everybody hanging out, social distancing away from each other at a cubicle in an office. This is people whose basic idea is to knock each other so hard that sweat and saliva fly off of them and onto other people nearby, thus being a hotbed for the transmission of said plague. I mean, nothing sucks worse than that, right? Yeah, so somebody's got the COVID at the PC. Who knows who they gave it to? People who work in there say they've never been tested by WWE because they're just doing temperature checks. That's fine. I mean, Lord knows the only possible symptom you could have is if your fever spikes. That's it. That's the only one. Didn't you know? They were talking about that. If your fever spikes, you've got COVID. If it doesn't, you don't. So there you go. Oh, wait, that's not the case. And also, people can have it and be contagious, but not be symptomatic. You know? So, I don't know. Feels like maybe you should do some stuff like they were doing over at the AE Dubs, where they're actually doing the rapid blood test on people and not letting them into the building, and, you know, unless they've gotten that done, to make sure they're doing as much as possible to... Now, this isn't a, you know, AEW versus WWE thing. At least it shouldn't be. If it is, if you're like, but AEW, but WWE, but... No, there's no buts. I'm not playing favorites here. If AEW was handling this pandemic the way WWE was, I'd be tearing them a new one. And if WWE was on top of it and actually, you know... There are some conflicting reports about whether or not they told people they weren't allowed to wear masks. Now, I don't know. Some people said told we couldn't. And some people said I was told that I couldn't. So, you know, who knows? I think if you tell one person they're not allowed to wear a mask on TV because it looks bad, especially, you know, in front of a certain WWE Hall of Famer who occupies the White House, you know, a personal friend of Vince McMahon, it would make him look bad if your big, strapping young gents and ladies had to wear masks to protect themselves from the fucking plague that's going on. Would I put it past WWE to tell people you're not allowed to do that? You have to be here. You're not allowed to leave. And also, you're not allowed to wear a mask. Would I put it past them? No. Do I know that's what happened? No. Do I suspect that's what might have happened? Yes. But I have no proof of that. Just the complete and utter lack of benefit of the doubt that this company has earned over the years about everything. So, yeah. I mean, it came out earlier today, like, WWE tweets out something like, We've recently learned that Braun Strowman will be unable to appear on WWE Backstage tonight. We look forward to having him on the show in the future. And because of WWE's utter lack of benefit of the doubt surrounding this situation, because of their own behavior and their own actions, or rather inactions, surrounding the fucking plague that's going on right now, because of all that, I see that tweet and my immediate thought is, well, that sounds like code for something. Braun Strowman will be unable to appear on WWE Backstage tonight, but we look forward to having him on the program in the future. Sure sounds a hell of a lot like, let's not tell anybody that Braun Strowman is sick right now and we don't know what it is. It sounds like that. I don't know that that's what it is, but it sounds like that because of the mess WWE has gotten themselves into. You know? And speaking of WWE getting themselves into messes, the greatest wrestling match ever, TM. It took place on Sunday. And here's the deal. If they hadn't promoted it as such for a month leading up to it, if they hadn't had Charlie Caruso just out of the blue go, wow, guys, I'll bet if this match takes place, it will be considered by some to be the greatest wrestling match ever. We were all like, what? Charlie, are you okay? Did somebody hit you in the head? And then the WWE entirety, all the people who were talking on TV, all their promotional materials were like, this is going to be, without a doubt, definitely the greatest wrestling match ever. And we're like, guys, why would you put that kind of pressure on the people performing, or yay, even on you as a company to deliver that? Why would you do that? That's stupid. And part of it was like, what if it is great? I mean, what if it is excellent, like a fantastic match between two wonderful performers? Like Randy at the top of his game, we'll talk about that later tonight, is one of the best in the world. And Edge, beloved, totally came from out of nowhere, just a dude who was like in a vampire faction and broke out of that to become a Hall of Famer. Like, if we watched a great match between those two, would we love it? Would we maybe even judge it better because it was between those two guys? Guys in their 40s, one dude who hasn't had a real wrestling match, no gimmicks, no frills, in 9.5 years, wouldn't we like look at it and say, considering everything that's gone on, like you got to look at this as being one of the, like, probably Edge's, maybe even Randy's best match ever. And like, that's saying something for between these two guys. But if you go in with zero expectations or middling expectations, or hey, this might be pretty good, and Edge and Orton give you what they gave you on Sunday, if you go in with no expectations, that thing looks like an absolute 100% top of the line, remembered in 20 years classic. But if you go in for a month with Charlie Caruso out of the blue calling it the best match ever when it hasn't fucking happened yet, and everybody else on commentary forced to call it the best fucking match ever, and the goddamn like promo materials, the poster has Edge and Randy saying the greatest wrestling match ever on it, when you go in with those high expectations, I don't know that anything can live up to that. That's the perfect example of how not to promote a match like that. Also, here's how to not produce a match like that. I don't know. Put in a whole bunch of fucking canned cheers like it's a goddamn laugh track on a sitcom from 1986. Even when you cop to it, by the way, thank God they did that. When they say ahead of time, this match deserves to be in front of thousands of people. A match this good that hasn't happened yet deserves to take place in front of thousands of people. So we wanted to make sure it sounded like it was in front of thousands of people. If they hadn't said that and just threw it out there with all that obvious canned crowd noise, like, nothing could have overcome that. Nothing. Nothing. As it was, this match, as great as it was, and it was fucking great, guys. Great match. It was fighting against all of that bullshit the entire way through. And the weird fucking camera angles didn't help. I know it was supposed to be like cinematic in-ring match. It didn't work. Didn't work. Just fucking do the match. Let the PC kids who are in attendance, not wearing masks, let them react in the moment. Start their own This Is Awesome chants. Like, let them swell to a huge roar when they think one of those near falls is going to hit. And then, oh, when it doesn't. Let them do that. Let it be a real, authentic reaction. Also, maybe don't invoke the spirit of dead Howard Finkel as your ring announcer. Why do you always, WWE, insist on sabotaging yourself? Sabotaging your own, I was going to say employees, independent contractors when they're out there putting together a fucking phenomenal match like that. You got to get in their way. You got to just hold up. What you're doing is great, guys, but hear me out now. What if we piped in a whole bunch of shitty fucking crowd noise, huh? Huh? Wouldn't that make it a lot better? Huh? I think it's ironic that Edge was saying that it was going to be his first real wrestling match in 9.5 years without any bells and whistles. And then what did they fucking do? They basically piped in a whole bunch of fucking bells and whistles and cheers and jeers and chants and... They couldn't just leave well enough alone. Just give us Orton versus Edge. And have it promoted as a straight-up wrestling match. Have it promoted as such. Have them do that. Don't do the greatest wrestling match ever thing. That's stupid. That's always going to be stupid. But just promote it as a great wrestling match between Randy Orton and Edge, continuing the feud. Fine. Wonderful. Looking forward to it. Can't wait to see what Edge does in this match. Will Randy actually give a shit? Because, as we'll talk about later, when Randy actually gives a shit, he is an amazing performer. The problem is, he very rarely gives a shit. Like, you think about his entire career. If he gave a shit during the entirety of that career, he'd be the best ever. 100%. No question. But he's given a shit, I don't know, what, 20% of the time, maybe? Let's be charitable. 35 to 40% of the time he gives a shit. And maybe 10% of the time he gives two shits. Like when he's really into something, like now, he is so good at what he does. But when he's not into it, when he's not into it, you have to call the great Kali out of retirement and do a fucking Punjabi prison match with Jinder Mahal when, yeah, no. So, the finish of the match, I don't know where in the match Edge tears his triceps. That's fucking sucks. Fucking sucks. Edge is 46. He's in the best shape of his life, but he's 46 years old. You're tearing triceps, dude. Like, you're not young anymore. I'm 40. So Edge has 6 years on me. I was putting on this t-shirt not 45 minutes ago. And I felt my shoulder pop. And I was like, oh no, it's the big one. I'm going to die now. You know, I mean, obviously I'm not in the best shape of my life. Far from it. But I understand as you get older, things get a little wonky, you know? So he tears his triceps, and that sucks. Sucks. Because who knows what they're going to do with him after that. I mean, it sure seems like the storyline they're going with, they were planning on doing anyway. Like, I don't think Edge is wrestling, you know, matches over and over and over and over again, but they might have, you know, they might have predicted SummerSlam. But anyway, this straight-up wrestling match ends when Randy goes low, obviously goes low, but only half of the announce team is like, was that low? That might have been low. It was low. And then he does the punt because nothing else is working. Near fall after near fall, guy, like Edge is pulling out all of his old moves, the Edgecution, Edge-O-Matic, the Educator. All them Edge puns, which I loved, they're all back. And the only thing they could put away, the Spear didn't work. The only thing they put away Edge, RKO and all that stuff, the only thing put away Edge was a punt. Prime Randy Orton, man. I'm insane, and so how I get my jollies is inflicting brain damage on people. Notably, you know, sometimes old people. So I guess Edge kind of fits into that, but bum. So the punt ends it. And Edge is laying there looking up at the lights, and Randy's laying there. Go back home. Go be a father and a husband. Go back to Beth and Lyric and Ruby. I swear, Lyric and Ruby, those girls gotta appreciate, man. Those names have been mentioned more on TV than a lot of people who work for WWE. They're certainly a more notable presence on television than, I don't know, lots of people. But that's the end of Backlash. As we go through a review of Raw, now that I'm 18 minutes into this fucking thing, so buckle in, it's going to be a long one. As we go through Raw and we start hitting up things from Backlash that have to do with Raw, I'll touch on Backlash stuff as we go through Raw. And then all the significantly SmackDown stuff from Backlash will be covered with the next SmackDown episode. Everybody cool with that? Guess what? It doesn't matter if you are or you aren't, because it's my show and that's how we're doing it. Okay, cool. So, Raw starts out with Randy coming out, talking about how I beat Edge. Not only did I beat Edge, I humiliated him. Dude, it was a really back and forth match, and I'm pretty sure if you didn't like go low and then hit him with a fucking punt, he might have beaten you. So the idea that you can say, I humiliated him. I am the greatest wrestler ever because I won the greatest wrestling match ever, so I am the greatest wrestler ever. I mean, you won because you cheated and the ref didn't see. I mean, it's fine. You know, it's fine that you won that way. That's who you are, Randy. I'm totally cool with that. But, meh, you're delusional. I guess that's the point, right? So, cool. That could be your point. I'm fine with that. But he's talking shit about Edge. And so, Christian shows up. And he's, oh yeah, society's right. So Edge says that Orton says Edge won't be cleared until July of 2029. Get it? Because that's how long he's out with injuries. Christian comes out and he's basically like, shut up, Randy. You know, this isn't cool. And Orton's like, what are you even doing here, man? I mean, you're jealous of Edge. You've always been jealous of Edge. You've never been half of what this guy, what Edge was. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we're buds, but come on. Get the hell out of here. What are you doing? You know what? I'll bet. I know what you are. You're envious of Edge. Envious Edge got to have that last chapter, but you're not going to get it, right? Because you're not medically cleared. But here's the deal. How about I challenge you to one more match? But since you're not medically cleared, how about it's unsanctioned? And right there, you're like, oh, crap. Christian's going to die. That's not good. So we'll talk about that later. He demanded an answer from Christian by the end of the night. And what I thought they were going to do is have, you know, Christian say, yes, but I want to prep for it. And we'll have it at Extreme Rules or whatever. It's an unsanctioned match. So Extreme Rules is the perfect place for it. I thought it would be a kind of cool way to like keep the whole thing going, and Christian can be on TV for a few weeks and like give us, you know, let us get back acquainted with Christian and how great he is. And they could show clips from their amazing feud, their one more match feud between Christian and Orton. I thought that's where they were going to go. I didn't think what happened was going to happen. So that's good. That's good. I like when things are unpredictable. This, honestly, all in all, was a pretty good episode of Raw. You know why? Because it was chock full of stuff. The like storylines intersected and dovetailed in and out and lasted the whole night. There weren't too many ninja fights. We'll talk about that in a bit. So Angel Garza, who I will remind you is fucking engaged, hits on Charlie Caruso backstage. He's engaged because I don't know if you know this, but when he won Cruiserweight Championship on NXT, they like showed him propose to his girlfriend in the ring NXT, and she said yes. And until they tell us that they broke up, he's still fucking engaged. And it's weird that he's in, like hitting on Charlie Caruso. If you want to tell me they have an open relationship, I know I bring this up every time, but I'm the only one who's doing it, and it needs to be fucking brought up. Angel Garza is engaged. If you tell me that he and his girlfriend split up, the engagement was called off, maybe because Angel Garza couldn't keep it in his fucking pants, and his girlfriend found out about it, his fiance found out about it and broke off the engagement. You tell us that? Fine. You tell us that he and his fiance have an open relationship? I'm less cool with it, but I'm cool with it. I'm totally cool with it if they actually have an open relationship. I'm less cool with it if they make that the storyline for why he's hitting on Charlie Caruso. Because, you know, it's tawdry. It's fine. Listen, I'm not here to kink shame anybody. If that's your deal, awesome. In fiction, to like give your guy a reason why he's just aching to stick it in Charlie Caruso, maybe you should not have that be the storyline for an engaged guy. Just saying. Okay. Before the match, Andrade and Angel Garza, because it was the pre-show. I wasn't going to fucking talk about it. Angel Garza, you know, distractions have gone off the rails where Angel Garza tries to distract the ref from counting a pinfall on Andrade during the pre-show on Sunday night at Backlash. And the way he does it is he hops up on the apron and the ref looks at him, and Angel Garza literally makes this face. Like, I don't even know why I'm up here, dude. Like, I'm just, they told me to get up on the apron, so I did. Ow. Hurt my shoulder. Yeah, so that's how Andrade loses, because the distraction allows Apollo to hit another thing on Andrade. And then, oh, that's why, because Andre Garza gets up on the ring, and Kevin Owens, who's in a feud with Garza, who's sitting at ringside for commentary, he pulls Angel Garza off the apron, hits him with a stunner. Andrade's like, what? What has happened? Oh, no. How will this affect my match? The answer is not at all. So you should probably pay attention to Apollo Crews, who then hits him with a toss powerbomb and wins. So Angel Garza has a match with Kevin Owens tonight, and Andrade's kind of pissed because he blames Angel Garza for getting him disqualified. Not disqualified for him losing because of the distraction. So tonight, Zelina Vega's like, hey, guys, we're all on the same page here, right? Right. And of course, they're not on the same page. Like, Andrade's not supposed to be out at ringside. He's not. That's weird. And so Zelina Vega says, get the hell, you know, like, he comes out halfway through. It's a very short segment. Halfway through the segment. And Zelina Vega's like, nah, screw this. I'm leaving. So he's at ringside, and Angel Garza is there, and Andrade distracts the ref, and Angel Garza kicks Owens in the stomach, which is the beginning of the wing clipper, his finishing maneuver. But he kicks Owens, then turns around to try and get the ref's attention before hitting the finisher. Dude, just hit the finisher. Then, while Owens is down and hopefully out, then get the ref's attention to call the pinfall. You're just not doing it right, Angel. So you're not allowed to blame Andrade for this. But of course, he does. And then Zelina Vega comes down ringside and says, hey, guys, you play nice. We're gonna work together now. Of course, they're not, because, you know. So, at Backlash. Not Payback and not Paylash, not Backpack, but Backlash. Lashley and McIntyre had a great fucking match. It was really good. Lashley's best match since he beat Roman Reigns clean 2 years ago at Extreme Rules, almost exactly 2 years ago. And then, like, the next night, they made Roman Reigns the top contender for the title, even though he had just lost to Bobby Lashley. So Lashley's been kind of, you know, wallowing in shit. Like, he's been having bad storylines, and of course he had the worst storyline ever when he was part of the Rusev and Lana thing, which took up all of our time in the last quarter of 2019. And then Rusev was like, yeah, this is so bad, I'm just gonna leave now. Is that cool? And he did. And so they were trying to figure out what the hell we do now with Lashley and Lana. I'm not really sure. So they're doing this whole thing where Lashley says to Lana, don't come down to ringside. And then Lashley and McIntyre are having a great match. MVP's there with them, doing some good emoting. There's a whole a lot of meme-worthy reaction shots of MVP from that match on Sunday. And so Bobby Lashley hits a spear. I mean, he's beating the hell out of McIntyre. McIntyre's resilient. He's fighting back. They're hitting each other as hard as they can, but Lashley's definitely in control for the entire match. Certainly on the verge of winning it. He hits a spear, and McIntyre kicks out. And so Lana comes down to the ring, saunters down in her little mini skirt and her heels, her Ariana Grande cosplay, and she says to the ref, she gets on the apron, says to the ref, you cheated. I saw you. You cheated. That was definitely three. Which is just, like, not how it works. Like, if the ref is going to say, oh, you're right, Lana, I'm sorry. That was three. Ding, ding, ding. New champion, Bobby Lashley. That's stupid. That makes everyone look stupid. So Lana is knocked off the ring apron onto MVP, and McIntyre gets a cheap claymore for the victory. And then Lashley is pissed at Lana. He and MVP leave together. And I don't love McIntyre. Sorry, I was reading something there. I don't love McIntyre gloating about that victory because he was getting his fucking ass handed to him during that match for a good portion of it. He was fighting back, of course, but like Lashley was in position to win. You only won because Lana, you know, distracted him. Now, I'm fine with you getting the victory that way, but maybe you shouldn't say, ha-ha. Maybe you should say something more like along the lines of, Bobby Lashley, you almost had me. I mean, condolences about your wife being stupid, but you almost had me. If you want a rematch, I'll give it to you. But next time, maybe don't attack me before the bell, because it took me a long time to get back. And honestly, you might have beaten me if it wasn't for your stupid wife. Which, of course, would inflame Lashley toward Lana even more. Having McIntyre go, I beat you, Bobby Lashley. I'm the best. I'm so much better than you are, Bobby Lashley, because I beat you. You hit a cheap claymore. Come on. So, on Raw the next night, Lashley and Lana, MVP and Lashley are backstage. They get interviewed by blonde, not Charlie Caruso. I want to say Sally? Sarah? Sheila? Starts with an S. Blonde, not Charlie, interviews them backstage, I think. I think it's them. Like, what are you doing? This is a private conversation. What are you, why would you even think we would talk to you? But Lashley and MVP, the WWE Universe is a buzz. Nobody's a buzz. Nobody's fucking a buzz. Not about this. We're not a buzz. And he's like, no, we're going to go out to there and talk about Lana right now. So they go in there and start talking about her. And then Lana comes down and she's like, what the hell are you doing? How dare you? You've been, all of us have been all wrong. I've been blah, 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 Bobby Lashley, blah, 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 blah. And then like, MVP first calls her a thought, which is not something I have heard on WWE television before. Yeah. Thought, which of course means in the Urban Dictionary, a woman who has many casual sexual encounters or relationships. A thought. That's like ho. I've heard ho a lot on WWE TV. And slut. Heard slut. Never heard thought, though. Interesting. Anyway, she gets pissed. You're not allowed to talk to me that way because I am a woman. Thank you very much. Bobby Lashley like takes MVP's side and even says, you know, like, I'm sorry I married you, whatever. You only married me to get famous. And Lana says, which is true. If I only wanted to have sex with you and marry you to become famous, I would have had sex with somebody way more famous than you. Which is, you know, fair. There are a lot more people in the WWE locker room that were more famous than Bobby Lashley when she decided to, you know, cheat on Rusev with him. Although, what happened to the whole thing? Like, I only cheated on you, Rusev, because Bobby told me that you cheated on me. We never figured that part out. That was never a thing that we figured out. Remember how Maria Kanellis said the real father of my baby is Rusev? Was that the person that Rusev cheated on Lana with? Do you ever figure that out? Is the Kanellis baby actually a Rusev baby? Guess we'll always have questions about that storyline. Anyway, so Bobby Lashley says, you know what? I want a divorce. And Lana is crestfallen. I mean, she spent all that time in the end of 2019 preparing for that wedding that was so terrible. So terrible. And then she got married and it was all googie wise and they lovey dovey and now not so great anymore. So, yeah, it's too bad for old Lana. Later in the night, they have a scheduled, tag team match. MVP and Lashley versus McIntyre and R-Truth for some reason. Well, that's something I didn't love about this whole episode, Rob. But anyway, now, on Sunday, they were supposed to have, they said tonight, I think this is what they said, tonight, on Sunday, they said tonight, we're going to have a tag team championship match between the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders. And I tweeted out, this will be a wrestling match. Yes, not you know, sack race or 200 meter backstroke or tiddlywinks or whatever. Because I thought, oh, thank God, they're actually going to have a match. Nope, not going to have a match. They wanted to have a match, but then they couldn't do it because they had a brawl in the parking lot and they destroyed Braun Strowman's car. But Braun Strowman didn't see it or didn't care because we never actually got any update on that. Maybe we'll get it on Friday, but they're on different shows and they're not allowed to actually interact until Survivor Series season, or so I've been told. So I guess that'll be something we come back to in November, where Braun is really upset with the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders for beating up his car. And it was a huge brawl, and the brawl is all cinematic-y, and it's really terrible. It's got all kinds of terrible, like, hijinks and all the stupid stuff they did. And they're, anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. No, you can't. Yes, I can. No, you can't. Yes, I can. Show tunes feud. Anything they did, everything they did in that came back. So there's a golf club that came back. Bowling ball. Montez Ford took a bowling ball in the nards. Like, it was just all over the place. Back and forth. And then they just had to keep fighting. Like, there was a bunch of times where they were like, man, what are we doing? Why are we fighting? Let's keep fighting. And I'm like, I don't, what? And then they're in the parking lot. Akira Tozawa shows up as the leader of a bunch of ninjas on crotch rocket bicycles. And so then the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits have to team up. And they team up as the Viking Profits. You team up two names of the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits, and you come up with Viking Profits, not Street Raiders, which is fucking badass. Street Raiders is awesome. Even, ooh, gosh, this would be good. Raider Profits or Street Vikings. That's good too. Anything's better than Viking Profits. Viking Profits, because it's, you know, it's not P-H-E-T-S. It's not like Vikings who can see the future religiously. It's Profits, P-R-O-F-I-T-S. And I don't know what Viking Profits are. Is it like when you go on a raid and you come back with extra goats? Is that when the Viking Profits are looking good? Because you got more goats on the raid? So they fight off all the ninjas. Ninjas. They're little guys from the performance center wearing ninja costumes. And then Akira Tozawa stands there and he's got a giant ninja, a giant black ninja performed by this guy, Jared. I can't pronounce his last name. O-M-E-G-H-B-I-N, I believe is how it's spelled. Jared O. Big black ninja, 7'3" apparently, big dude. And so all the Eric wants to fight him one on one, and the rest of the Viking Prophets say, "No, let's not do that. Let's instead escape up this weird scaffolding on top of a semi trailer for some reason, and then keep fighting when we were just friends until we jump into a dumpster on purpose." And then the lady ref Jess, who's an actual lady and an actual ref for WWE climbs up a ladder to peer over the dumpster to look down to tell them, what are you guys doing? It's your matches next. And then, out of the blue, for no fucking reason, she looks at Ivar and says, Ivar, you're kind of cute. You, Eric, not so much. Which is just, it just continues the stupid thing about the thing with the... with the thing, and I want everyone who was involved in the production of this quote-unquote match to be rounded up, arrested, jailed, and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. This was fucking awful. Did I mention how after Lady Ref left, the Viking Prophets were attacked by an alligator, or at least an alligator's tail, inside the dumpster, and I guess got out because that was the end of the segment. That was it. So the Viking Prophets are all backstage. They're friends again. The Viking Prophets. Because they got more goats during the raid, so the profits are up. And then the ninjas are back. Akira Katsura Tozawa is a ninja. Get it? It's funny because he's Japanese. This is one step below ramen noodle moonsault from a few months ago. Last month, whenever the fuck that was. The thing that got Jerry Lawler pulled off a TV. This is not as offensive as calling Akira Tozawa's flipping senton a ramen noodle moonsault. But it's almost as offensive because you only have one guy who's Japanese on the roster. And so he's obviously a fucking ninja. And then that you told him to be as like comedic as possible when like he's doing this. Like, doing that shit. God damn it. Why is it so bad? Anyway, the ninjas are there, and Akira Tozawa's there, and the big ninja's there. Jared O is there, and Eric still wants to fight him, and the rest of Viking Prophets, the rest of them still don't want Eric to fight him, but they do have an 8-man tag where it's Akira Tozawa and 3 ninjas, but Akira Tozawa never really gets in the match. Versus the Viking Prophets. And the Viking Prophets win with dual giant splashes, and none of the ninjas get any moves in because they're like ninjas from a Chuck Norris movie in 1983 where they don't really know how to fight. They just are dressed like they know how to fight. If they're ninjas, they should be fucking ninjas. Let them do ninja shit. Let them do kicks and stuff. Ninja vanish like with smoke bombs. Let him throw a shuriken at somebody. Come on. At least give one guy nunchucks. If you're going to do ninjas. Anyway, the ninjas lose. And then the big ninja gets in the ring with Akira Tozawa, who does his hands clasped seizure thing that he's doing. And the Viking Prophets are very scared of the very big black ninja who hasn't done an offensive move on anybody yet. Hasn't even done a big boot or a like overhand chop or something. So how are we possibly going to take on this big ninja? I know. Big Show's here for some reason. Big Show's here for some reason. Big Show gets in the ring and the big ninja leaves, and then all the little ninjas attack Big Show, and Big Show beats up all the little ninjas. That's it. So Big Show's now an unofficial member of the Viking Prophets. Later on, we see him. At least this is it. Thank God for Big Show, honestly, though. Like, honestly. I don't know why he's fucking there. What he has anything to do with these guys. with the Viking prophets. The Viking prophets when Street Raiders was right there. I don't know what he has to do with them, but he's there. And thank God he's there, because later in the night, as he's trying to show off his merch that he got from them, he says, I have an idea to how to break this tie you guys are in. How about next week you actually have a wrestling match? And if I was in the room with you at that moment, Big Show, I would have kissed you. I would have had to get on a stepladder, but I would have kissed you. Thank you, Big Show, for suggesting that these two very talented tag team wrestlers, these two tag teams of very talented wrestlers, have a wrestling match and not a terrible comedy skit or, I don't know, as I said before, like, I don't know, an egg toss or some shit. I just want the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders to have a really good match. I just want tag team wrestling to be tag team wrestling. During all of that shit on Sunday, the terrible, huge fucking thing that happened during all of that, the former Scott Dawson, I believe. Yeah. From the Revival, tweeted out, yes, guys, we see it. And yes, we're very happy that we are not, this is me adding it, that we are not in WWE any longer. Because all they wanted was for WWE tag team wrestling to be taken seriously, and it is not. So, anyway. Seth Rollins is a very fun kind of delusional, where Dominic, as I said, Dominic came without his dad's permission to the PC to answer the invitation. He's being interviewed and says, you know, they say that Dominic is here, but nobody's been able to see, nobody's seen him yet, but I know that he's here. I can feel his presence. And so he's basically like Darth Vader in a presence I've not felt since Survivor Series. Yeah, wasn't that the last time we saw Dominic? Survivor Series? Yeah. A presence I've not felt since Survivor Series. So anyway, he has a basically a live via satellite promo battle with Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio says, if you touch my son, I will end you, Seth Rollins. And Seth's like, well, no, listen, you're making this harder. Like, if Dominic comes here and wants to be a part of what I'm doing, then that's great. If not, then he's going to have to be a sacrifice, just like you were a sacrifice, blah, blah, blah. And then, meanwhile, like, I forget why exactly what was happening in the promo, but Seth Rollins gets down on his knees. And then Dominic runs in from, like, sneaks in the back way and clotheslines Seth Rollins and punches him a bunch of times. And then like the fucking Keystone Cops, Theory and Murphy come in trying to chase, Dominic around. Dominic is as agile as Leo Rush. I did not have that in my, did not bet on that. But there he goes, flipping around everywhere, evading everybody. They should have been playing the Benny Hill theme over, just playing some yakety sax over Buddy Murphy and Austin Theory chasing. If anybody's out there and is really talented with, like, video editing and stuff, because I suck at it. If anybody's out there and they want to just do something for me to make me smile, and I'll tweet it out and give you credit, can you find the clip of Buddy Murphy and Austin Theory chasing around Dominic and then dub over yakety sax You know the song. It's really too bad that Buddy Murphy and Austin Theory aren't agile enough to catch Dominic, who's running around in fucking jeans. Oh well, too bad. He, Dominic, hopped the rail and escaped. And then what I did like was Murphy and Theory wanted to jump after him, but there was plexiglass there. And they were foiled by the plexiglass. Couldn't chase him. Too bad. R-Truth was under a ring in another part of the performance center. And he was like yelling at the ninjas who were supposedly under there that they wanted to pin him. I thought that was funny. Later the ninjas are there. And they brought their own referee ninja, which was honestly the funniest thing that they did. It still doesn't make any fucking sense to me. And I still hate that it's like, hey, Akira Tozawa is a ninja because he's Japanese. But the ref ninja popped me. I'm not going to lie. But then Drew McIntyre shows up and all the ninjas run away because Drew McIntyre exists. Anyway, MVP and Bobby Lashley want a winner-take-all tag team match where R-Truth's 24/7 championship and McIntyre's, you know, are on the line. There's the WWE championship. And R-Truth accepts on his behalf. And then later, this is the thing, like this is interesting. Like it's usually everything happens and it's self-contained and that's it. But I like that over the course of the night, you have Drew objecting to R-Truth having accepted on his behalf, because if basically like, if you get pinned, I lose my title and I don't think that's a good idea. And like, oh, you're right. If you get pinned, I could lose my title. Hold on 1 second. So, and they agree there's only one title on the line of this tag team match. And that title that's on the line is your title. And Drew's not very happy about that. Christian came out to the stage to accept the challenge. He earlier in the night, he was talking on the phone, I guess to his wife. I never really figured out who he was talking to. Must have missed that. But he was like, no, I know about the risks. And then also, Big Show is there, and he's talking to Christian, and he's like, listen, dude, you're not cleared for a reason, you know? And it's an unsanctioned match because Randy just wants to do whatever he wants to you. That's the reason he made it an unsanctioned match. So you have two choices. You can do the smart thing and walk away, because who knows what could befall you if you have this match, or you could be a man. Like basically what he's saying is like, if Orton said those things about my best friend, I'd punch him right in the mouth. So basically Big Show gets Christian to be like, yeah. So Christian goes out to the stage and accepts the challenge. So later tonight, not at Extreme Rules, as I had hoped. Later tonight, we're going to have an unsanctioned match. Christian versus Orton. Oh. The Iconics defeated Natalya and Liv Morgan. And then they beat them. Natalya was like apparently she said to Liv, you can start, but then tagged herself in before the match actually got going. And then Liv was the one who wound up on the wrong end of things, and she took the pin. And then the Iconics challenged Sasha and Bayley to a match for next week. Sasha and Bayley, who are in the building, but will not come out when they are challenged to a match right then. So Peyton and Billy challenged for next week. Backstage, there's Natalya is saying mean things to Liv about how disrespectful she is and how she's making rookie mistakes. You have a complete lack of discipline. You have no discipline is an actual quote. You have a complete lack of discipline. You have no discipline. And this is Natalia, who then goes on to say, I've been here forever and I know everything about everything and I'm awesome and nobody gives me any credit. Everyone's so ungrateful. I'm like, okay, great. Natalia's doing a heel turn. But then Lana slinks up from behind after, because Liv like has heard enough and just leaves. And then Natalia continues her promo to nobody. And then Lana's like, hey, yeah, man, gosh, you think you've got it bad. My Bobby divorced me. I thought I was going to be married to the WWE champion tonight. And then and Natalia's like, yeah, I know exactly how you feel. And basically, let's be friends. Let's you and me join forces. Lana and Natalia. If you're scoring at home, a Lana and Natalia faction is something that was created in a lab for me to hate it. So, future episodes of Sour Graps on Tuesday nights should be fun, because I will hate anything that Lana and Natalia do together. Guaranteed. But I do like that they're using Lana being dumped by Bobby Lashley to get her into a program with somebody else. And now we got something else coming out of something. This thing happens. This changes a character considerably. And now they've got something else to do. That's good. That's good. Not so great. Although being mean to Liv Morgan. She's nice. I like her. Hey, Ric Flair's there just so he can have a backstage segment with his daughter, Charlotte. It's like, I gotta know. Tell me, here, backstage, at the Performance Center, in front of this camera, what's your plans? Not getting on the phone and calling your fucking daughter and saying, hey, what's your plans? Whatever. It's like, what title are you going after? And Charlotte's like, what you want to know what title I'm going to? No. Like, Rick actually says, you don't need a title. You're a Flair. I just want to know, is there anybody who's like, you know, really you don't like who you want to go after? And I was like, everybody doesn't like me, so I don't like everybody else. Anyway, woo! She just woos at her father. That's a whole fucking segment. I guess they need to have that segment so there's a reason for Flair to be hanging out backstage, so that he can talk to Christian later and tell Christian, don't have this match with Randy Orton. He's not stable, and he's really going to hurt you. You don't need to do this. So I like that. It was kind of good. We already talked about Big Show having the amazing idea that a wrestling match should take place. So McIntyre and R-Truth defeated MVP and Bobby Lashley. There was a while there where McIntyre did not look very happy with R-Truth tagging himself in and stuff. But then eventually Lashley went for a spear, was like dodged by R-Truth into the ring steps. And then McIntyre hit the Claymore and MVP and tagged in R-Truth. So R-Truth get the pin, which is nice, but I don't know what it matters. It's just nice, and they do the rocket launcher as a you know finish, and they posed together. Rey Mysterio is going to be here next week. Who knows what's going to happen? Ric Flair tried to talk Christian out of fighting Orton. Okay, here we go. Bayley and Sasha Banks. They're there to celebrate Bayley's birthday. Bayley's got a new haircut. Like, she shaved up the back of her neck all into her hair. She's got like a swoopy bangs, and like it's all like it's swoops in the front and knives in the back. Like, it's the total mom haircut. I love it. And she's got shaved into her the back of her head is a birthday cake. It's her birthday. She's very happy about that. The Iconics interrupted them again. And then they had a little promo battle, and they actually Peyton Royce brought up beating them at Rania last year, and then they're having their meltdowns. Somebody called the Wambulance, that stuff. And then Sasha's like, "How dare you?" And then Peyton Royce slapped her in the face. And Bailey's like, hey, that's not cool. I think Sasha, from her response, wanted Bailey to like throw a punch at Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, but she did not. So Sasha wanted Bailey to stick up for her physically, but instead she's like, you know what? You're on. We're having a match on Raw next week. And I think that might be it, guys. I think that they beat Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart on NXT this week, and then they might lose the titles to the Iconics in the next week. Now, the tag team title match, Triple Threat, was great. Petition for all tag team triple threats to have one member from each team legal at all times. That makes tag team triple threats awesome, as opposed to when they suck, where two people are in the ring, and then there's one tag team that both of them are on the apron. It's just really weird. I don't like that. I love when there's three people legal because of the way it works. Like Alexa Bliss straight up forgot that Sasha was legal for the other team when she was pinning Peyton Royce. Like Alexa Bliss looks shocked that there was another person who could come in who was legal who could pin her. That was really good. It makes Sasha look smart. It's completely understandable because that's not how triple threats are usually fought. Good. All good. Great, great pacing. The Iconics are looking a lot better in the ring. I believe firmly they were asked during their last run to look like shit in the ring because it's funny. But I think they're looking really a lot better. I don't know if I love their tag team finisher, but I thought this was good. I thought that match was really great. So anyway, yes. Bailey and Sasha versus Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart in NXT, which should be a lot of fun. Gosh, I really wish they got to do it at Full Sail in front of the Full Sail fans. That would be really cool. But COVID, so yeah. I don't know why I'm thinking that, but it does feel like because you got a bit. Maybe they'll lose it at Extreme Rules. I want them to have enough time to really build the feud if they're gonna do finally Bailey versus Sasha for the title at SummerSlam, whatever SummerSlam is going to be. Yeah, they should do that. Give an actual build. Asuka beat ? Nia Jax on Raw. It was weird. The match at Backlash was fine. Asuka can get a really good match at a Nia Jax, and a lot of people can say that. But they wanted to protect Nia for some reason. There's a report that Asuka was supposed to pin Nia clean at Backlash, but Vince changed the finish to the double countout. I don't know, maybe to prolong things with Nia Jax and Asuka so that Charlotte can have her match versus Asuka at SummerSlam. Because you know that's fucking happening. But Asuka and Nia Jax, you know, beating each other up, doing stuff. Double count out was an unsatisfying finish on Sunday. And then the next two nights in a row, Nia Jax gets a rematch, which I'm fine with because of the double countout the night before. She gets a rematch for the title on Raw, and she's beating up Asuka. And then she pins Asuka, and Asuka's foot is under the ropes, legitimately. Like, I don't think Asuka even really put it there, just landed there, and Asuka's foot's under the ropes. And John Cone, the referee, is like, her foot's under the ropes. And Nia's like, what? And Nia gets up and just two hands shoves John Cone in the chest, which you can't do. And John Cone would have been well within his rights to disqualify Nia Jax right then and there. But instead, John Cone, because, yeah, there's a quick count by John Cone, because she just shoved him. He should have just disqualified her anyway. So him doing the quick count is basically her saying you're disqualified. Is him saying you're disqualified to her. I'm fine with it. But Nia Jax is still pissed, and Asuka looks like she can't beat Nia Jax. Asuka, who was told to her face by Bayley after winning Money in the Bank, saying, I'm happy that you won Money in the Bank because it's not actually for the contract, it's for the title. You are the best wrestler in the world, says Becky Lynch to Asuka. So I'm happy you will be the title holder. All we've seen Asuka do since then is not be able to beat Nia Jax and also struggle mightily with Charlotte. Is she the best wrestler in the world or isn't she? I don't know. I think it's Asuka. It's fucking Asuka. Asuka can win a match versus Nia Jax. Let Asuka win clean via pinfall or submission and not distraction whoopsie daisy. Let her win a match versus Nia Jax, for fuck's sake. And now we get to the end of the night. The very end of the night, because apparently it was like 5 minutes left of the show when this unsanctioned match was supposed to start. And everyone's like, this is going to be over quick. This is why they probably should have done this. I understand why they couldn't, but this is why they probably should have done this like at the beginning of hour two. You could have done, you could, honestly, Drew McIntyre's the champ. You could have done his segment, his match versus Lashley and MVP. You could, it's a winner take all or whatever. It's a tag team for the singles title. You could have done that as the main event and done Randy and Christian at the top of hour three. Because then we wouldn't have known going into it, oh man, this is going to be over quick. Because we only give us 5 minutes left in the show. We're like, well, now you've kind of telegraphed this shit to us. Let's find out how it goes. But the problem, but the good thing about it is they didn't telegraph it exactly how you thought they were going to. Because as the match is about to start, Ric Flair comes out again. And he's trying to get in the way of Christian. I love the way he did this too. He's like, Randy, stop. You stay there. Like, because Rick has this paternal relationship with everybody, but especially Randy from the Evolution days. He's like, Randy, you are not going to do this, okay? Let me talk to him. Like, I thought that was a really good use of Ric Flair for the first time in forever. A really good use of Ric Flair. And especially what happens next. Him saying to Christian, no, you don't have to do this. Please don't do this. I just talked to Edge. He says this is stupid. Now, I don't know if that was actually in the script, but I like that detail that, like, Rick was able to get through to Edge in the hospital and Edge told Rick. Like, they could have made that a bigger deal. I just got the phone with Edge. He told me to come down here and stop you from doing this. Edge does not want this. You can get on the phone, get out of this ring, go back to the back, and call him yourself. Edge told you not to do this. It's not worth it. That is a really powerful part of this story, if they had actually focused on it. Instead, Rick mentions it in passing. I just talked to Edge. He says, don't do this. Please don't do it. Just don't do it. And Christian's like, Rick, thank you. I appreciate it. I got to do this. So Rick fakes like he's going to get out of the ring. Ding, ding, ding. Match starts. The old Ric Flair uppercut to the balls from behind. And Christian goes down. And then the punt from Randy. Immediately. Like a shark with blood in the water. Because immediately after that, Randy is beside himself. Can't believe he just did that. can't believe he just did that to his friend, to a man he respects. And he starts saying, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do this. You made me do this. Goes from, I didn't want to do this. I'm sorry, to, you made me do this. This is all your fault. This is him bargaining, using anger, all this shit. It's all so good. Calling for medics himself. Take care of him. You take care of him. Make sure he gets the right medical attention. All that stuff. Randy Orton, as fucked up, like, former assassin with PTSD who can't stop himself from killing dudes because he's the legend killer. It was a dumb fucking segment earlier in the night. It was just too obvious with him and Charlie Caruso, where Orton says, tell me, Charlie, would you consider Christian a legend? He's like, yes. Yes, I would. I would consider him a legend too. Am I the legend killer? Okay. Well, like, come on, guys. You could turn up the subtlety a little bit, but the aftermath of the punt on Christian, so good. They put him in a neck brace. He's cradling him. He's whispering to him, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry you made me do this. Why are you even here? Why did you show up tonight? I love that he says, you somehow, I don't understand how this makes sense, but it's fine that it doesn't make sense because he's fucking insane. But him going, you're messing with my livelihood. Like, I don't know how Christian is messing with Orton's livelihood. I don't know how Edge is messing with Orton's livelihood. Like, how is Orton not going to get matches? He's fucking Orton. But all of this, him just, this is peak Randall, man. This is peak fucking Randall Orton. This is some good shit. I love Randy Orton as the fucking PTSD assassin. This is so good. There's so much you can go with here. This is the actual natural extension of the amazing segment from the night after Royal Rumble where he attacked Edge. This is the real extension of that. This is perfect. As much as WWE tried to sabotage the greatest wrestling match ever, trademark symbol, as much as they tried to fuck with that, because they tried to fuck with that, the match ended up being fucking brilliant between two amazing competitors. And the night after, the aftermath of what they did with Christian, making Randy into like an unstoppable force of nature. I mean, I don't, Jesus. Yeah. He's so good at being the villain. And I'm realizing now I messed something up. I forgot to talk about Apollo Crews versus Shelton Benjamin. I'm not going to talk about it for long. It was a good match. Shelton Benjamin should be on TV more. I also love MVP, like, threatening / recruiting Apollo Crews to be in a stable. And I love that Apollo Crews, after Shelton Benjamin tried to get a pin with feet on the ropes, Apollo Crews gets a pin by holding the ropes, which is underhanded and devious and not smiles and is happy to be here, which is the worst thing about Apollo Crews. Him having some gray area is good. Also, him being nudged toward being a heel and being in a stable, him and Bobby Lashley, which is what I fucking called for a month ago, managed by MVP, would be awesome. Awesome. Those two guys could absolutely be a tag team champs. If Bobby Lashley is not long for this Drew McIntyre feud, I think Drew could work with Randy Orton. I really could. I really do think that that's a good thing. Like, Randy's at the top of his game right now. There's no more Edge, not for a while. I think the next time, if we want to have this thing happen, the next time Edge is back, not that I love this because I don't love it. Listen, I'm a man of contradictions. If Randy is somehow champion when Edge is healthy and Edge gets to come back and have a match with Randy for the title and Edge gets one more championship run. And listen, you could convince me that Randy's the guy to take the title off of Drew. You really could, as at the top of his fucking game as Randy Orton is. I'd buy a ticket. Not really, because I'm not going to fucking wrestling show right now. It's fucking plague. They probably wouldn't even let me wear a mask. But anyway, Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton would be a great fucking feud. I could absolutely see Randy saying, like, hey, Drew, the chosen one, right? I bet you 10 years ago, you thought you were going to be a legend in this business. Never quite made it there. But kudos on your title run. Doing pretty good stuff. That's doing really good work. I'm impressed. Who knows, you know? Long enough title run, you might just be a legend yourself one day. I mean, if you're going to be non-subtle with the whole legend stuff, that's certainly a reason for Randy to come after Drew, let alone the title he's got, but Randy to come after Drew, I mean, why not? Why not? Especially if, you know, you can find a way to get the title on to Randy, and I don't know how long a 46-year-old man is going to be out with a torn triceps. Whenever Edge is fully ready to come back, having him come back and wrestle Randy for that title would be pretty fucking sweet, considering that masterclass they fucking put on Sunday. Like, I want so badly to be able to watch that match without the crowd noise piped in and without the shitty fucking camera angles. It's amazing to me how WWE can be so extra in their incompetence. Like, we can't just let this thing speak for itself. We got to promote it as the best wrestling match ever. We can't just let the people in attendance react to this great match. We got to pipe in some shitty fucking crowd noise. We can't spend a little money and test all the people for COVID-19 who work for us. We'll just do some temperature checks. Like, somebody's got it. It's a deadly fucking disease. My wife's coworker, nice guy, name's Kevin. He sat next to her when they had an office and they were all attended. His dad got it and died yesterday. His dad wasn't an old man. His dad didn't have respiratory problems. His dad was in his 50s. Ric Flair is 71. And for all we know, like, actually died in an operating room, you know, like, you're exposing people who don't need to be exposed to this kind of shit. I mean, when you think about it that way, promoting a random wrestling match as the greatest wrestling match ever doesn't seem so bad. Now, does it? That was Raw and the Raw part of Backlash. I have been Alex Pawlowski. This has been Sour Graps. Everybody, be well. Take care of each other. Because everything sucks.